Today, I'm going to begin speaking about the Mashiach. And the topic of the Mashiach is really not known by many people. It's a topic which is shrouded in mystery, really. And what I'd like to do is give several shurim, because that's what it's going to come out to. Several shurim on the Mashiach, in the many different areas of that. Now, the different topics of the Mashiach that I'd like to go through is I want to begin talking about the origins of the concept of Mashiach in terms of Hashkofa. In other words, basically what the Mashiach does and how all this originates. The second ideas that I want to begin talking about is the historical antecedents of the Mashiach. What are the conditions that will appear in the Bria, in the world, before the Mashiach comes, and why? What's the logic of these peculiar kind of conditions? And why is it necessary to appear before the Mashiach comes? And this, by the way, will give you an entire insight of what's happening today and why it's happening. Now let's go back and begin the origin of the concept of Mashiach, which is very important. If you recall, from last week and the week before, we're talking about Adam Rishon. And strangely enough, it really all begins from Adam Rishon. Now, if you recall, the universe was at a certain level in terms of the amount of concealment of the Rabbanu Shlomo in the Bria. It was just enough that Adam should be tempted, that he shouldn't see God all over. He should think, well, maybe there's a little room for me in this universe too, and he should be able to be tempted. In addition, the amount of evil in the universe, the Yetzer Hara and so on, was also a minimum amount. It was exactly balanced between the Yetzer Hara and Yetzer Tov. There was an exact balance. It was just as easy for Adam to do a mitzvah as it was to do a sin. It wasn't like it is today. It was really exactly equal. There was no difference. It was the same inclination to do a chet as to do a mitzvah. Same thing. So both of these things existed before Adam Rishon was created, of course. Then, of course, he's created and put into the universe at a certain level. Now, that level is called chesaron. That was the deficiency in the universe. The deficiency in the universe when Adam was placed was the fact that there was a certain amount of hester. Hester Yehudoi, or Hester Ponim, a certain concealment of the presence of the Ribbono Shel. And the second part of that chesaron was there's a certain amount of evil also in the universe. And Adam, in this Bria, was supposed to do really several things. He was supposed to listen to the mitzvah, not eat from the tree of good, of the Eitz Hadas Tevara, not eat from that tree. As a result of that, he would have been able to purify his body and the entire universe. If you recall, I talked about Zikuch HaGuf and Chiddush HaOlam and so on. He should have then, after doing the mitzvah, his physical body would have changed into a much more spiritual one. In other words, his physical body would have been refined, as well as the universe itself would have been refined. Besides that, Adam Rishon then also would have removed evil from the universe. No more Yetzer Hara, no more Satan, no more Malach HaMavos. Gone is the entire force of evil. That's the second thing that would have occurred. The third thing that would have occurred is that the All Rishon, which I'm not going into exactly now because it's a very profound concept, what he should have done is, after he would have done the mitzvah, then the presence of God would have been completely revealed to the universe. Anybody who had that happen, anybody living at that time would have seen how God is the root of everything. Not like today, where we do not perceive God at all in human events and so on, only from a very distant point. So what would have happened is that this knowledge or the revelation of God would have been throughout the universe, just like we find it by Matan Torah, when God revealed himself. It says that what a maidservant sought Kriyas Yam Suf, Yecheskel never saw, the Novi, the prophet Yecheskel never saw him. That's how much the presence of God was revealed in a real sense. You really felt, and whatever you saw, it wasn't a vision obviously, but you knew that the Rosh Hashanah existed of a certainty. In any case, that would have occurred after Adam Rishon had done the mitzvah. And the fourth thing that would have happened is that would have started Olam Haba. Gan Eden would have become Olam Haba, the future world, and that's it. Then man would have enjoyed for Lenetzach Netzachim, for all eternity, the pleasure that was supposed to be his. However, we all know, of course, that Adam Rishon did not do that. Therefore, many things occurred. And I had gone into the ideas which had occurred last week. But what concerns us now in order to understand the Mashiach is one thing specifically occurred. And that is that until now, as I said, there was a certain amount of deficiency or chassar in the universe manifesting itself in two ways. There was a certain amount of concealment of God's presence, one. And two, there was a certain amount of evil or temptations or forces trying to get man to sin. This was the original chassar. But that was a very small amount. Because since man did not create this concealment or the evil, it's not fear of the Ribbono Shel Olam to put man and give man a very difficult test. So the Ribbono Shel Olam gave him a very easy test with a minimal amount of concealment and a very small amount of Yetzer Hara. That's all. The test was only supposed to last a small amount of time, for 4 hours or five, whatever, until Shabbos, and that's it. Had he lasted, Olam Haba would have started. That was real Yosha from the Ribbono Shel Olam. What did Adam do? He did the chet, right? He did the sin. So what does that mean? That means that since Adam did the chet, what happened is two things. First of all, that God conceals his presence even more so because of his chet, because it's midah keneged midah, a measure for measure. You believe you are somebody, you believe you're equal to me, so then God hides himself more to justify that illusion in your mind. And now it's even harder for you to dispel the illusion and to realize that really God is the only one, the source of all creation. So therefore, there was a much greater hester, a much greater concealment of the presence of God as a result of the chet of Adam Rishon. And I pointed out that is indicated in Bezeh Sapecha Teicha Lechem, in the sweat of your brow you will eat bread. That's where you see the amount of hester increasing. This was last week and so on. In addition, what was increased was that evil now became part of man's being. Until now, it was external. Evil now became part of man's being. It clung to him. The evil temptation now became internalized in the psyche of man. Evil now clings to the body of man and to the universe itself, and has control over the physical substances. So therefore, this addition in the amount of concealment plus the amount of evil is called kilkul, destruction, okay, damage. So chesaron is the original state of the universe, which Adam was placed in, but Adam, by doing the chet, the sin, was mekalkel the bria. He damaged the universe. Because of his sin, he now increased the amount of hester, concealment. In addition, he also increased the amount of evil in the universe, or the amount of control that evil has in the universe. He increased it. So Adam Rishon increased the amount of kilkul. Now, therefore, we now begin to perceive that there are two levels of avodah, work. It is not sufficient for Adam Rishon, or man, to merely remove the original chesaron, the original amount of concealment and evil. Man now has two levels to achieve. First, he's got to remove the amount of concealment and evil that he contributed by his sin, because he increased the amount of concealment and evil in the universe. He's got to remove that first. He has to masakin, or fix the kilkul, the damage that he did. After he does that, then he'll be back to the original stage of Adam Rishon, which is the amount of concealment and sin in the universe. And then he has to fix that, which is the original test of Adam Rishon. So it comes out that man now has two levels of avodah, two jobs to do. One is to remove the kilkul that he himself made. The second is to remove the chesaron that the Ribbono Shel Olam made. You see, there are two levels of service that happened after the chet of Adam Rishon. Because Adam Rishon did the chet, and therefore he did not usher in the presence of the Ribbono Shel Olam into the universe, he therefore was responsible in making sure that there would be another individual who would do what Adam Rishon had to do. Adam Rishon was the first man, he was also the Mashiach. Because the Mashiach means nothing more than the Anointed One, which means that he is anointed to bring the presence of the Ribbono Shel Olam into the universe again, where it was concealed. And that is man's task. However, since he didn't do his job, he obviously was no more the Mashiach. Therefore, the Medrash says very interestingly, and I mentioned this last week, that Adam saw that David HaMelech would die at birth, King David would die at birth, so Adam Rishon gave King David, David HaMelech, 70 years of his own life. He originally was supposed to live 1,000 years, which is equivalent to one day, because God said to him, in the day you eat it, you will die, and one day is equivalent to 1,000 years. So therefore, he lived 930 years, because he gave 70 years of his life to David. What does that Medrash really mean? Since he failed in doing the Chet, to bring the Ribbono Shel Olam into the universe, the presence of God all over, he now had to give life to another individual to bring the presence of the Ribbono Shel Olam. So therefore he created a concept called the Mashiach ben David, the Messiah, the son of David. David HaMelech was the beginning of the kingship, which is the beginning of kingship in Israel, royalty, Mashiachus. He was also anointed, because every king is anointed. And of course, out of David HaMelech would eventually come the Mashiach ben David. So therefore, Adam Rishon gave life to the concept of Mashiach ben David. He now had to give it to somebody else. Now, besides that, there's another Mashiach, which most people have never heard of. Most people know very little about it, even though those who have heard of it. And the second concept is a concept of Mashiach ben Yosef. An extremely important concept. And as you'll see, that Mashiach ben Yosef is as important and as big as the Mashiach ben David. However, people used to think in terms of Mashiach ben David for other reasons. Now, you recall that I told you that there are two levels of Avodah, right? The first level of Avodah is you must remove the kilkul. You've got to get this evil out of your body, out of the universe, because the amount of evil has increased. The Sitra Achra, which means the other side, means the forces of evil, have much greater control over the universe and over man's physical body. Therefore, the job is one to remove that kilkul, and a second job is to remove the chassan, the original deficiency that God put into the Bria. So therefore, the Mashiach ben Yosef is the individual designated to remove the ra, the evil, the kilkul that man made. And the Mashiach ben David is the one that removes the original chassan. That's the purpose of two Mashiachim. So it now becomes there are shtei Mashiachim, two anointed ones. One individual who is appointed to remove the kilkul, the ra, from the universe. And that's exactly what the Mashiach ben Yosef has to do. And that the evil in the universe is used. There's a Kabbalistic term called the Zohar Moshel Nochosh. The Zohar Moshel Nochosh means that the Nochosh, the snake that tempted Chava, after he tempted her, he injected in her, so to speak, a poison, his poison. That really means that the universe and the body of man, Adam and Chava, became infused with evil. That's what it means, that evil now dominates the physical body. The Yetzirah became internalized. That is what's called the Zoyama of the Nochosh, the poison of the Nochosh, okay? And as a result of the Nochosh, his temptations, as I said, evil now became much more. Therefore, it's the task to remove this evil from the universe, to get rid of this evil. That's the tafkid or the tachas of the Mashiach ben Yosef. The second tachas, which is after you've gotten evil out, man is still at his original state, right? He's got to remove the original chassan in the universe. That amount of evil and that amount of concealment that he was placed into, and that is caused by the Ribbono Shel Olam. That is the tachlis of the Mashiach ben David. To mezakech the guf. That means to first you get evil out of the body, then you purify the body. You see? So the Mashiach ben Yosef deals with the external, the chitzonis, the evil that became part of man's body. The Mashiach ben David deals with the pnimius, the internal, the body itself, to remove the original chassan of concealment and evil that was found in the Bria. You have two individuals who now come into existence because there are two levels of Avodah. You see, now you begin understanding the ideas of Mashiach ben David and the ideas of Mashiach ben Yosef. This is what happens. So we are now at the point where Adam does the Chet. The Mashiach ben Yosef and the Mashiach ben David now are assigned the task, whoever they are, whatever the Neshamas they are, to do what Adam Rishon had to do. Now I want to mention one idea which I'll dwell on much further later down the line. Every neshama, the word neshama is a collective term and it's also an individual term. The neshama is really consists of five parts. Okay, so as such, when we say neshama, we refer to the collective groupings of that entity, spiritual entity called the neshama. And those five parts are the nefesh, the ruach, the neshama, there it is in its singular part, chaya and yechida. Those are five parts of the neshama. And there's also a part called neshama itself. Now, when we refer to neshama, we're referring now, of course, to the collective body. Now, the greatest part of the neshama is the yechida. Yechida, it's like yochid, the feminine of yechida. Yechida means the singular. And it floats above the head. Okay? It's the crown on mankind. Every neshama has its yechida that floats on its head. It's really the crown. Okay. It's not an aura, it's a crown. That aura is physical, it's not spiritual. I don't want to get into that. The yechid of Adam HaRishon. Okay, Adam HaRishon had the same thing. He had an neshama, he had the same soul, and he also had a yechida. Now, when Adam HaRishon did the chet, every aspect of his soul was nivgam. Nivgam was damaged, the kilkel. Evil grabbed onto all the different parts of man. So every aspect of neshama was damaged in that respect. The only part that was not damaged whatsoever is yechida. Yechida flew away from Adam Rishon. And that was not damaged. So the only soul in all creation that was not damaged whatsoever by the chet of Adam Rishon is the yechida of Adam Rishon. Now, I'll explain yechida later on, and you'll understand what it does and what's happening and where the yechida of Adam Rishon is now. But just very briefly, I just want to mention that this yechida splits in two and is put on top of the two Mashiachs. In order to be a Mashiach, you have to have that yechida of Adam Rishon. That aspect of his soul must enter the individual and then he becomes the Mashiach. So therefore, one half of that yechida will go to the Mashiach ben Yosef, the other half of that Yechida will go to the Mashiach ben David. And that is what makes them the Mashiach. That is what would have made Adam HaRishon the Mashiach. Had he done the mitzvah, Yechida would have remained on Adam, he would have been the Mashiach, because he would have ushered in God into the entire universe. Since he didn't, Yechida flew away, that Yechida la'asad lavoi in the future will split and go upon two different individuals. And that is what makes the individual the Mashiach, when he possesses that yechida of Adam HaRishon. And therefore he is able to do what Adam HaRishon could have done, and that is to bring the Ribbono Shel Olam back into the Bria. That's a short hakdama, which is very necessary to understand the entire characteristics and the aspects of the Mashiach itself. So this is just some of the information about yechida that's important to know. Now, we'll understand that much better, what its function is, what the yechida is, and so on. Let's go further. Now, a question was asked of me a while back. How come it's so easy to do an avera and so difficult to do a mitzvah? Yes, I know. Now I want to answer, because now it's its proper time. The answer to that is that in the beginning, it wasn't more difficult to do an avera, or rather to do a mitzvah, than it was an avera. It was equally balanced. But man who has done evil, he did a chet, what he does is he increases the amount of control in the forces of evil, therefore they have the greater powers to tempt man. It's mida keneged mida. Remember I said that once man had done the test, justice demands he be given a harder test. Why should he be given the same easy test? Since he contributed to the failure. So what that means is that the Yetzirah, or the forces of evil, have much more control about tempting you to do a chet. So therefore it's easier to do a chet than it is to do a mitzvah. But that's Adam's fault, that's your fault, that's all our faults. That's why it's easier to do an avera than it is to a mitzvah. Because we give the power, every time we do a chet, we give the forces of evil greater abilities to tempt you in more ways. So they just come at you from 100 different directions of tempting you, which is today. Today is 1,000 different ways to be tempted not to do the Ratzon of the Ribbono Shel Olam. Whereas good presents itself in maybe one way. Give a donation to a yeshiva, take a little safe and learn. Look at the unevenness between how easy it is to do evil, or chatoim, and how difficult it is to do mitzvahs. And the answer to that is because mankind has done that. That is what's meant by the forces of evil gaining incredible ascendancy and power. That's why it's so difficult to do a mitzvah, and it's so easy to do a chet. You see, that's really the answer. And we understand that now clearly after the chet of Adam Rishon, that it's the kilkul, the contribution by man, that makes it so easy to do a chet. Why it becomes so difficult to do a mitzvah. It's man's own doing. Had it been reverse, then it would be easier to do a mitzvah than it is. Then we would have 10,000 ways to do a mitzvah and only 3 ways to do a chet. But it's because man, Klai Yisrael, unfortunately, keeps doing chatoim, sins, and as a result of that, the forces of evil which manifest themselves, this isn't a spiritual kind of term, it means that the force of evil has control over the Bria, that the forces of evil can give success to everybody that can pull you away from Torah and mitzvahs. All of a sudden there's entertainment, there's TV, all these different things can schlep you away from doing Torah mitzvahs. Because the koyach of the Sitra Achra, the force of evil, gives these ventures success. He has the rishus, and the one who gives him permission is you. The Ribbono Shel Olam acts on the basis of the actions of man, not he himself wants to do that. So that's the answer why now it's so difficult to do a mitzvah and it's so easy to do a chet. Let me give an example. The guy who invents TV, right? This guy is working on an invention. This man cannot invent TV unless there's a reason for the hatzlacha to be had. History, of course, doesn't look at it that way. So all of a sudden, Jews are doing chatoim, right? And all of a sudden, Ribbono Shel Olam says to the Sitra Achra, okay, you may now give this individual the success in marketing his TV. Because that TV is going to schlep Eden away from yeshivas and from learning at night. They're going to sit and watch TV at night. Since they're doing sins, then the concealment of God must be further hidden. And TV does an excellent job of hiding the Ribbono Shel Olam by watching all the shtusim and nashkeiten that America has to offer. So therefore, all of a sudden, the guy who invents TV, all of a sudden finds a millionaire willing to sponsor him. Who gives the success in that venture? The answer is the Sitra Achra. He's given permission by the Ribbono Shel Olam in response to the chatoim of the Eden. You see what I'm saying? So all these ventures that you see, all the different things that pull people away from learning or being involved in mitzvahs, have been given success because of the chatoim of Jews. And that's why the Ribbono Shel Olam gives them the success that they have. So we see now the concept of the Mashiach ben Yosef and the Mashiach ben David now arises as a result of the chet of Adam HaRishon. So he is no more the Mashiach. We now have different individuals taking over that task, taking over his crown and their crown. Okay, let's go further. Let's now proceed through history more rapidly, and let's get to all of a sudden Jews find themselves in Egypt, right? Now, people ask themselves, why were the Jews so many years in slavery? The 200 and odd years that they were in slavery. Why? What does it all mean? Most people don't understand what that Shibud Mitzrayim was all about. The exile in Egypt. What was that all about? Jews didn't do any sins before. Before that, all you had was Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Then you had the 12 tribes. They all went down to Egypt with Joseph, right? And all of a sudden, they wind up in slavery for the other next 200 years. What's going? Why? Right? What's really going on? And then there's the Indian of Moshe Rabbeinu. He comes out of nowhere, right? He's born, right? And all of a sudden, he goes into exile for the next 40 years. He leaves Egypt, right? He kills the Mitzri. He's got to run away. And he winds up in Ethiopia, king of Ethiopia for 40 years or whatever. And then finally, at 80 years old, he finally comes back to the original settlement of the Jews in Egypt. What's going on, right? And then you find, besides that, we have mitzvahs as I mentioned, on Pesach, like matzah. I had mentioned some of the ideas of, if you recall, of chometz and matzah previously, but again you have the mitzvahs and matzah and so on, and then you have, we just had the yontif of Shavuos. What's that all about? Let's go into it again from the standpoint of the real underpinnings of the Bria. What is the real agenda? What is the real undercurrents going on in the Bria for the thousands of years? And we're now up to Yetzias Mitzrayim. Now, what the Rabbeinu Shlom wants is obviously that man should remove that kilkul, that evil which he has put into the universe. Now, unfortunately, after Adam, man still could have gotten Olam Habor very shortly with Cain and Hevel. But Cain instead winds up killing his brother, right? So he further increases the evil. Then you had the 10 generations, right? Before Noach, you have the 10 generations before Avram. All those 20 generations is an incredible amount of evil, one on top of the other, stack on top of stack. Until finally, the evil that has come into the Bria is so incredible that the Rebbeinu Shlom decides to destroy the universe. Okay, which he did, okay, and that minimized the amount of evil. And then the next 10 generations, from Noach to Avram, was more evil, with the Dor HaFloga, where they wanted a war with God and so on. Mankind does not reverse itself. It keeps getting more and more evil. Until the Rebbeinu Shlom says, look, enough is enough. The Rebbeinu Shlom waited for any individual, not only Avram, any individual could have taken up the banner and done what the Rebbeinu Shlom wanted. But the Rebbeinu Shlom waited for 20 generations and no one took up the banner. So the Rebbeinu Shlom decided therefore to give the task, the task to Avram Avinu. Avram Avinu at that time was the only one who was in the service of the Rebbeinu Shlom before the Rebbeinu Shlom appeared to him. So Rebbeinu Shlom decided to give the task to Avram Avinu, that you are the one who will remove the kilkul in the Bria. You will remove the evil. You are the one who are going to do my mitzvahs. You are the one who are going to proclaim my name throughout the world. At that point in time, the Rebbeinu Shlom makes a covenant with Avram. And you know what that means? That is the beginning of Jews. In other words, until Avram Avinu, there was no such concept as Jew. Every individual could have done the same thing Avram. He could have initiated an entire tribe or nation that would do what the Rebbeinu Shlom wants. However, nobody did that. So therefore, the Rebbeinu Shlom waits for 20 generations until Avram Avinu comes. Avram Avinu comes, and the Rebbeinu Shlom makes the Bris Bein Absurm, a covenant that you will be to me for an individual that will work to bring me back into the universe, and I will be your God. This is an agreement, the Bris Bein Absurm. That's the covenant, okay? And Avram Avinu accepts that covenant. So the Rebbeinu Shlom now waits another 3 generations until Yaakov. Why? Because it takes 3 generations for anything to be implanted in that generation. In other words, if a tradition is held for 3 generations, then that will never be forgotten in that family. This is the way it goes. So therefore, he waited till Yaakov. Yaakov observed the Torah also, right? So therefore, the idea or the fact that the covenant, the agreement, would be kept by the Jews is now firmly implanted. So therefore, who's the one who is now called Yisrael? Yaakov. Right? Nobody was called Yisrael until Yaakov, because it took 3 generations until they implanted, until the covenant became secure, and he now becomes Yisrael. That's why he's called Yisrael. Very good. Once Yaakov now becomes Yisrael and the covenant is now firmly established, you now have room for the 12 tribes. Now Yaakov gives birth to 12 tribes, right? He gives birth to 12 tribes. And the 12 Shvatim, okay, is what's going to constitute Klai Yisrael. Now, as a result of that, since Klai Yisrael, now as a nation, not only as individuals of Avraham Yitzchak and Yaakov, is now going to assume the task of the Rebbeinu Shlom. What was the task of the Rebbeinu Shlom? To remove the kilkul of Adam HaRishon, to remove the evil of Adam HaRishon. So therefore, the Rebbeinu Shlom sends the Jews into Egypt to go into Golos, to go into Shibud, going under the dominion of the Egyptians in order that their suffering should remove the amount of evil that was placed on by Adam Rishon. Therefore, the whole idea of Mitzrayim was to remove what's called the Zoyama of the Nochash, to remove that evil which had gained tremendous power as a result of the Chet of Adam, and also the Chatoim of all the peoples, right? So therefore, to remove all that, the Jews, since they assumed upon themselves the task of doing what the Rabbeinu Shalom wants, and that's to remove the influence of evil in the Bria, right? So therefore the Jews took it upon themselves and they were in slavery for 200 years. That's what Yetzias Mitzrayim was all about. That's why the Jews went into Egypt, to remove what's called the Zoyama of the Nochosh, the entire evil that has built up as a result of man's refusing to do mitzvahs. Now, all of a sudden, but we say what? That when the Yidden will do the mitzvahs, in other words, after Egypt, when it follows, therefore, that the evil of the Nochosh, in other words, all the evil, the kilkul contributed by man, is now gone. Is that correct? So therefore, we should have what's called the Mashiach ben Yosef, right? Who's the Mashiach ben Yosef in that time? Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu was the Mashiach. And not only that, he was the Mashiach ben Yosef. He was one of the many Mashiach ben Yosefs. But he was the first real Mashiach. Klal Yisrael has succeeded now in removing the chet, the evil that was contributed to mankind as a result of Adam Rishon and all the generations after him. Now, they now are entitled to a Mashiach. Who is that Mashiach? Moshe Rabbeinu. He's the Mashiach. And he is about to be Goel Yisrael. He's going to redeem Israel. Doesn't that sound exactly what the Mashiach is supposed to do now? Look at the parallels between Egypt and now. That's why the Egyptian Golos is called the Geula Rishona, the first redemption. And what we're involved, the 2,000 years of exile and the Mashiach taking us out of this, is called the Geula Achrona, the last exile, right? So the Geula Rishona was in response to the first Golos. And that first Golos was primarily to remove all the evil, and that would be had through the sufferings of the Adam, of the Eden, since they assumed the task of being a nation of God, which is to do that job. So therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu goes into Golos. He goes into exile, because the Neshama of the Mashiach is in exile, which I'll talk about later, the personality of the Mashiach. He suffers in his way to help Klal Yisrael, and Klal Yisrael has its own exile. Both of them go into exile. Moshe Rabbeinu, when he left Egypt, left really the only settlement of Jews in the world. It's not like today, wherever you go, there's a Jewish community. All the Jews were in Egypt. When Moshe Rabbeinu left Egypt, that was the end of his association with the Jewish people. Most people don't realize that. Ethiopia, wherever he was, there's no Jews over there. They're all in Egypt, on the Parai. So therefore, the idea is Moshe goes into exile in order to accept the suffering in order to get the Jews out, and the Yidden have their own galus. At the age of 80, Moshe Rabbeinu now comes back, the Mashiach ben Yosef now comes back to Klal Yisrael, right? And he now wants to redeem them. And of course, he's going to redeem them. So the Rebbeinu Shlom takes them out of Egypt, right? And he now brings them 49 days later, of course, he brings them to Matan Torah, the giving of the Torah, on Shavuos. Now, interestingly enough, one of the ideas which indicate that the evil was removed from the Bria, and now the Jews now could accept the Torah, which is what? The Torah that was going to be given by Moshe Rabbeinu was different than the Torah that was given now. It would have been that kind of Torah which Adam Rishon would have brought down. And that is, all people would have perceived the presence of the Rebbeinu Shlom throughout the Bria, as we'll see. It would have been different, and we'll see the whole idea that when the luchos were broken, what it meant is that that original Torah is not going to be given in that form. It was going to be given in the form of the second luchos. The Torah itself is different. What would have been given by Moshe Rabbeinu is different after the eagle, which we'll see. But in any case, here is the first mankind through the Jews finally removes all the kilkel, the evil, right? and they're now about to accept the Torah. Now, one of the mitzvahs which indicate the removal of all the evil is matzah. Matzah is the removal, the chometz going out of the matzah. One of the ideas is the symbolic indication of the removal of chometz, which is the always symbolizes evil. You remember the hot air stuff, the yeshayd mavade and enoid mavade, which I talked about previously. Matzah is the indication that now the universe is in the state of matzah, pure. It is now at the state where they are back to the original state of the chesaron of Adam Rishon. That's where they're back. The whole idea of evil has been removed, therefore, and matzah indicates that you are pure, therefore you now can eat pure bread without any, what do you call, admixtures of chometz, yetzahara. It's all gone. You see, that's what matzah indicates in terms of Pesach. And the Jews are now standing at the idea of Matan Torah. Now, Chazal say that the Jews at Matan Torah were like Odom Harishon before the Chet. Now you understand what it means. The Jews by Matan Torah had reached the level of Odom Harishon before the Chet, because of the hundreds of years that they were in exile in Mitzrayim. That had removed all that kind of evil. Therefore, they were now at the level of Adam Rishon before the Chet, which means that all they had to remove was the Chesaron. All the Kilkel was gone. And Matzah shows that. They now had to remove only the Chesaron. The Chesaron in the Bria. Interestingly enough, The day of Shavuos, the Yontif of Shavuos, what do we call Shavuos? Shavuos, right? That's a funny name for Yontif. Weeks.
Oh.
Right? What is Shavuos called? Weeks. Why do we call it weeks? It's a rather funny name. Well, what does weeks indicate?
Full cycle.
No. Full cycles of what? Of the 7 weeks from Pesach. So what's the whole Yichus of Shavuos? Is that it's a culmination of Pesach. The name Shavuos itself indicates that it is not a yontif by itself. It is a culmination of Pesach. That's why we call it weeks. That is the culmination of the counting of the weeks from Pesach. You see? So therefore, one can almost say that Shavuos does not have a Chol HaMoed, because Pesach is a yontif in itself, and perhaps all the days between the last days of Pesach and Shavuos is the Chol HaMoed until the last 2 days of yontif, which is Shavuos. In other words, Shavuos is the finality of what was started in Pesach. Here they removed all the, finally the time had been reached when the Chet of Adam Rishon, everything was Niskan, it was all corrected. Now they were going to usher in the Torah, which is the presence of the Ribbono Shel Olam throughout the Bria, throughout the universe. So therefore, that's why it's called Shavuos. And interestingly enough, there's a minute to stay up all night in Shavuos. So there are different reasons, but perhaps one can say that at Shavuos, Klai Yisrael reached the Madreg of Adam Rishon before the Chet, right? When there was no Misa, there was no death, right? We stay up all night to indicate that there's no death, because sleep is really a 60th of death. Any cessation of consciousness is really death. Means it's a cessation of the function of the organism. So therefore, we who stay up the whole night are really indicating that there's no death. Therefore, we continue going straight. You see, that's just a hesbon in the minik of staying up all night to show the matzav of Klai Yisrael at that time. But in any case, Klai Yisrael is now standing ready to receive the Torah. But what kind of a Torah they're going to receive? A different kind of Torah that we have now. It says by... Now, what kind of Torah would Klai Yisrael have been zeichet to? Well, Klai Yisrael said, Na'ase v'nishma. Na'ase means we will do and we will understand. So Klai Yisrael, because they said we will do and we will understand the Torah, they didn't say we will understand, let's inspect the Torah to see if we like it, and then we'll do the Torah. They said the reverse. If you, Ribbono Shel Olam, give us the Torah, it must be great. Therefore, we'll do it, and then we'll think about exactly what it means. So as a result of that, Klai Yisrael was zeicher to two kisarim. The Medrash says that they were zeicher to two kisarim, the Gemara, Chazal. Two crowns. The first crown, that each one received two crowns, Naseh v'Nishma. But one can begin understanding what does it mean by the fact that they received two, and what does it mean by crown? And I think I had mentioned it previously. But from that, we could begin to understand the kind of Torah they received. What they received, the whole idea of mankind is to understand two aspects of the Ribbono Shel Olam. One is Yichud Shlitasoy, that God is absolutely one in His ability to do. There is no other force in the universe but the Ribbono Shel Olam. Man's ability to do, his potency, only comes from the Ribbono Shel Olam. So the Ribbono Shel Olam is a Yichud in His Shlita, in His control, dominion over the universe. And the second thing man has to understand is Yichud Mitziusoy, that the only thing that really exists, the source of everything in terms of their real existence, is the Ribbono Shel Olam. That's called Yichud Mitziusoy. That is the Torah that Adam Harishon would have ushered in had he not done the Chet. The idea of Echad, of Achdus, the Yichud Mitziusoy and Yichud Shlitasoy. Now, Klai Yisrael, who is standing at the level of what? Of Adam Harishon before the Chet, right? Says Naseh v'Nishma, right? So perhaps their test was to say, let us inspect what you have to offer. Instead, they passed the test, right, in that sense. So therefore, they now are given Torah in a different form. Their Torah was of such a form where they understood, they perceived the complete control and dominion of the Ribbono Shel Olam over the Bria, as well as the complete true existence of the Ribbono Shel Olam of the Bria. In fact, they perceived it to such an extent where they all died, the Medrash says, that they all died. Why did they die? Because if you perceive that God is your source, what happens to you? You die. You want to go back to that source which you perceive. That's right. You want to become part of it. So therefore, Klai Yisrael perceived that. That was the gather of their Torah. Why is it called Keser, crown? Because what is the symbol of the king? His crown. The crown is a symbol of royalty, of kingship. In other words, if you're walking in a place that has a king and you see the crown, that reminds you of the king. What Klai Yisrael perceived is that they saw the universe and they saw the crown in the universe, which means that they saw the Ribbono Shel Olam, how he's the shirish of everything. Therefore, what they were looking at is what? Is the crown. It means they were seeing the Ribbono Shel Olam in the Bria. They were seeing how God manifests itself in all different areas of the universe. That's what's meant by the Keser, the crown. They saw the crown, which means they perceived the Ribbono Shel Olam in his real self, not in terms of the real self, but they perceived that the Ribbono Shel Olam was throughout the universe, not by logical deduction. They figured it out by Chochmah. They saw the crown. They understood how God manifests himself throughout the universe, and they saw that manifestation in the Bria. So therefore, they were given two kisarim, which means they were given two hasagas, two comprehensions. One was the comprehension of his shlita, of his absolute dominion, and the other was the comprehension of his mitzius, of his complete true existential being, as opposed to anything else. They understood Eino Imo Vadoi. Now, therefore, however, as time went on, okay, when Moshe Rabbeinu went up to bring the Torah, right, and they were in the, Moshe Rabbeinu went up for 40 days, and they were mamish in the process of Moshe Rabbeinu was going to come down the Torah. All of a sudden, the Yetzirah, the Satan, and this is his last bid for power, right, he comes in, and of course, he starts making a whole business, and finally, he fools them with the eagle. The eagle destroyed everything. It removed Adam after, and it instituted again the kilkel back into the universe. What man had achieved in getting rid of, the eagle had brought back in one swoop. So man was now back in the same position of Adam after the Chet. And Moshe Rabbeinu symbolizes that by throwing down the luchos, which means that Torah in this form you cannot receive. You now must receive Torah in another form, okay, and therefore Moshe Rabbeinu as the Mashiach cannot come. He therefore dies at the end of 40 years. That's the end of the Tekufa of Mashiach, the second time around. Therefore, Klal Yisrael has to now go on further to await further, undo the kilkel, and wait for the Mashiach later down. You see? So the Tkufa, had Klal Yisrael done the mitzvah, it would have ushered in the entire era of the Mashiach, and the Torah would have been that form, just like Odom Rishon. And unfortunately, that was not ushered in with the Egel, and Klal Yisrael went back to the kilkel. Now, Klal Yisrael is now obviously at the point where the Egel has happened, the Luchas were broken, and now that period of Mashiach, which should have been ushered in, is again not ushered in. Again, it's not ushered in because of the Chet. Klal Yisrael now return to the original state after the Chet, and you now begin again the Kilkel. Chazal say in the Gemara that Ein Ben David Bo, that the Mashiach Ben David does not come, Elo Im Kein Kulum Chayobim or Kulum Zakoim. Either all Klal Yisrael is righteous, all Klal Yisrael are sinners. That's when the Mashiach arrives. That's a very interesting statement. What does it mean? Now, we know that the Mashiach must come as a result of man's actions. Man has to bring the Mashiach, because the Mashiach ushers in the Hasoga, the comprehension of the Rabbeinu Shalom throughout the universe. That must come through your Avodah, through your work. It's not a free matona. It must come through the Avodah. So, Kulam Zakoim means that either the Mashiach comes when you do mitzvahs, and therefore man brings them because they're all righteous, therefore as a result of their righteousness, as a result of their mitzvahs, the Mashiach comes, or Kulam Chayovim, that everybody is really guilty. Everybody is in the situation of doing Chatoim. And if everybody is in the situation of doing Chatoim, how does the Mashiach come? What was the other? Do you recall the second way, that there are three ways that man does the Avodah? Either mitzvahs, tshuva, or yisurin. Remember? I gave the share previous. There are three ways that man is an Oved. Either he initiates his own Avodah and he does the mitzvah, or he gets a second chance, he does tshuva. If he refuses to do those two things, then he gets yisurin. And Yisurin itself is a work, it's a job, it's a task. It's also an Avodah. And I had explained how Yisurin is Megal Yechudoi a long time back. But in any case, Kulam Chayov means that Klal Yisrael is doing Chatoim. And therefore, what is the way Mashiach will be ushered in? Through Yisurin, through Golos, exile. Just like the exile of Egypt. Okay? So therefore, mankind finally has a way of being Kulam Zakoim at Matan Torah, and they bring the Egel, and there's no more Kulam Zakoim. So the Rebbe Shalom waits. He waits for 1300 years until the end of the Bayis Sheni. The Rebbe Shalom will not exile the Jews. He gives them a chance. He lets them go into Eretz Yisrael to build the first Beis HaMikdash, the Tanoim, right? All the Zugos, the Nevi'im. They build, the first Beis HaMikdash is destroyed. A second Beis HaMikdash. He gives them a chance to bring the Mashiach, or the utopian era called Messianic times, where the presence of the Rebbeinu Shel Olam is into the Bria fully. He gives them the chance by Kulam Zakoim. Let them do it by their own mitzvahs or tshuva. Their righteousness will bring the Mashiach. So the Rebbeinu Shel Olam waits for 1300 years. What happens? After 1300 years, the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed. That's when the Rebbeinu Shalom, I shouldn't say he realizes, but when it becomes realized to the Bria, that the Mashiach is not going to come through mitzvahs or tshuva, it's going to come through Golos and Yisurin. So therefore, Kulam Chayovim now begins, where the Yidden are not going to bring the Mashiach because they are worthy of the Mashiach through mitzvahs and tshuva. The Mashiach now will come through the third method, Yisurin. And Yisurin means Yisurin. When the Rebbeinu Shalom plays for keeps, when he plays Yisurin, it's embassy Yisurin. Because that's the only way the Mashiach is going to come. That's the only way the Kilkel that has been building up for thousands of years since Adam Rishon is going to be removed. Through the Yisurin of the Jews. But we have a forerunner. The Jews are going to have to go through what they did, just like they went through in Egypt. They went through 200 and odd years that they're going to have to go through not 200 years, but 2,000 years. 10 times the amount they're going to have to go into Golis in order to bring that Mashiach again. Because they've had another 1,300 years to add the Chet. Right? Besides, in other words, Klai Yisrael now has to undo the hundreds and hundreds of years of Chatoim. Besides their own Chatoim that they're doing even when they're in Golis. Which you see now how Mitzrayim is the forerunner of the Golis. It's Mamish, the first attempt when the Mashiach was supposed to come, and now we're into the last attempt. And this attempt, he must come, because that's the Shavua. But in any case, what I'm trying to give you is the appreciation of how history proceeds. Under what determines history is the whole idea of correcting the Bria from all the evil. And why the Eden are now in Golos for another 2,000 years. It's Mitzrayim all over again. That's what it means. And the Rebbein Shem now waits for Kulam Chayobim, which means that the Eden now are not going to be Zakai. They're going to be Chayev, which means that the Mashiach is going to, and Mashiach means the ushering in of that utopian period, is now going to come through the Chatoim of the Eden, which means that they must be Yisurin of the Jews. They've got to go again through Shivut. So the Rebbein Shem now throws them into Shibut again, and we're all back to Egypt again, from day one. So when you sit down at that Pesach Seder, you know now, because you're again in the same matzah. You're in Pesach again, and when you eat that matzah in chometz, when you're involved in not eating chometz and staying with matzah, the Rebbein Shem is saying, stick with the matzah, forget the chometz. That's what it means, that in every generation we have to see as if the Rebbein Shem is taking us out. Now you know what it means. We are literally doing the exact same thing that the Eden did in Mitzrayim. We're trying to remove the Kilkul and the Bria. The same Zoya Mosh or Nochosh, the same destruction or damage that Eden do by the Averas, we're trying to remove now. But unfortunately, it takes 2,000 years to rectify what then 200 years could have rectified. 10 times the amount. So therefore, that's what's meant in Chazal, that the Mashiach comes either Kulum Chayobim or Kulum Zakoim. Either the Jews will bring them by their Avodah, only by their Avodah, because they are righteous, or they will bring them by their Avodah, their work, because they are Chatoim. But what does that mean? It means the Yisur and the Golos. That's the way the Mashiach comes. That's what Kulum Chayob means. What Rabbi Yochanan, I think he's the one who said it, is telling you the fundamental way the Mashiach comes. Either he must come through the Avodah, but there are three ways of the Avodah. Either he comes through the mitzvahs and tshuva on one side, in Zakoim, or he comes through Yisurin and Golos on the other side, Chayovim. He is telling you the conditions which will bring the Mashiach. He's not telling you a drasha. Every time Chazal tell you, they tell you a fundamental principle in the design, in the operation of the Bria. Now, what's happening? But wait a minute. If we are now in Kulam Chayobim, which means 2,000 years of Golas, right? In order to get again rid of the Kilkul. And again, who are the people assigned to the task? The Jews. Because Avram Avinu made a covenant with the Rebbein Shalom, and the Rebbein Shalom said, you are going to massacre the Bria, and Avram said, I am going to massacre the Bria, and I will get the rewards of that people, of that correction of the Bria. That is the agreement. Now we begin to understand what the real agreement is. So therefore, Klai Yisrael, who is the progeny of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, we now have accepted the idea of going through Yisurin and going through the Golos. Now, time goes on. The 2,000 years come. Now, there's another very fundamental idea that Golos means when we are on the level of Kulam Chayobim, there's something that's happening, some fundamental ideas. And with these ideas, we begin to understand history. But Kulam Chayobim dictates two things. If Klai Yisrael had been Kulam Zakoim, they had been Mamish righteous, then the Mashiach would have come as a result of their Avodah through mitzvahs, which is the way he should come. And as a result of that, who would have declared? Who would have declared the unity of God? The Jews. In other words, every time you do a mitzvah, if you recall, you are made, you testify to the unity of God. Remember how? I do a mitzvah, I'm really saying that His will is the only will that should be listened to, not my will. Therefore, I do the mitzvah. So what are you really saying? That the will of God should be listened to, since He is the only one that really exists. So every time you do a mitzvah, you are testifying to the absolute unity of God. Every time you do an avera, you testify the reverse. That when you do an avera means what? That you do something that you want to do, right? So you're saying, besides God, I also am somebody. I can do what I want. So you are testifying to Yeshid Muvadai, that besides God, there's also me too. Okay, now, had the Yidin been Kurum Zakoim, then they would have brought the Mashiach by their own avodah, by their testimony that God is the only one that exists. He would have come to that, right? However, now we're into Kurum Chayavim. We are into 2,000 years of exile, which means two fundamental things have to go on. And these fundamental things describe what's historically happened. The first thing that's happening is that the Jews are in exile, which means that slowly, first they are dominated by the Umas Ha'olam, by the Goyim, by the nations of the world. First they're dominated, then they're persecuted, then they're spread out. Slowly, more and more, the Yidden are having more and more Yisurin. They're having pogroms, they're getting killed back and forth, left and right. This is the first part, because the avoid of the Yidden is the Yisurin that they're undergoing to declare the Rabbeinu Shalom. That no matter all the Yisurin, the Yidden are still willing to stick with God. But they do it through Yisurin, always on the pogroms, on the persecutions, the exile, the Yisurin, the suffering is what brings the Mashiach. Now, but the second thing is that since the Rabbeinu Shalom is now coming, not through mitzvahs, but through chatoim, and the Jews suffering or having Yisurin, therefore the Rabbeinu Shalom now has to order the Bria a different way. Let me ask you something. If you want to indicate strength, let's say you're a very strong person, and you want to indicate that strength, correct? So what do? Would you walk, if you want to indicate that strength, would you walk over to a child and beat him up, and then say, see, you see how strong I am? Obvious not. It's not a very great, it's not any test of your strength. It's preposterous, in fact, right? What you would much rather do is pick on Mr. Universe or something like that, or, you know, and beat him up. That's a way to indicate strength, correct? You don't pick on, you know, that which cannot in any way exemplify your strength. What the Rabbeinu Shalom does, he does the same thing. If the Rabbeinu Shalom wants to be magid or made or declare his absolute unity, the Jews are not declaring that unity because they're doing chatoim. They are declaring his multiplicity, not his unity. So then the Rabbeinu Shalom has to do it. You know how he does that? What he does is he gives success to different forces that they should then present themselves as opposing ideas to the Rabbeinu Shalom. What do I mean? It's what's called Riboy Metzias and Riboy Koiches. The universe has, the world has a tremendous amount of different forces. Everybody thinks he's somebody. Everybody is successful. People who work for a living think that they got the money because their expertise, their brilliance or whatever, right? We look around us in a universe that has tremendous amount of different things, a multiplicity of beings, right? We also look around and we see a multiplicity of different forces, means different things that can get things done. So therefore we're all fooled. We think that we don't see the Rabbeinu Shalom in the Bria. We look around and we see this incredible amount of plurality, diversity of different koichas, different people, different nations, each one trying to pull off some stunt, trying to do something. So therefore everybody feels, well, there are millions of different people that are matzliach because of their own designs and their own power. And there's also Ribui Metzias, where there are millions of different things to fool us. So what the Rabbeinu Shalom does is he now is going to increase the illusion of a multiplicity and plurality of different forces, different successes, different gaivas, different individuals who will conquer the world, different people who will think they're somebody. And in the end, when the multiplicity will be so great, where everybody thinks he's God's gift to this world, everybody, and everybody thinks that there is no Rabbeinu Shalom anymore, everything testifies to the reverse, which we'll see how, which historical events actually give rise to these ideas. All of a sudden the Rabbeinu Shalom is going to appear through the Mashiach, unheralded, instantly. And it's going to be a shockwave through the Bria. And all of a sudden, in the millions of different ways where everybody thought they were somebody, in an instant, they realize they're nothing. That shock, in other words, what the Rosh is setting up is a contrast. Where he knows, if I want to show you the appreciation of light, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to make it pitch black. Because you do not appreciate what light is unless you're in a dark room and you see you can't get around. So what the Rebbeinu Shlomo is doing is he's increasing the darkness in the universe. And what does that darkness mean? He's increasing his hester, his concealment. He's increasing the illusion that everybody's somebody. Everybody can do his own thing. Everybody's successful because of their own might. Koch creates miyadi. He's increasing the darkness. So in the end of time, when he establishes his kingdom through the Mashiach, it'll be a shock. The contrast will be so awesome that shudders will run down people's spine. That's the way the Ribbono Shel Olam will do it. In other words, if Klal Yisrael was Kulam Zakoim, then they by their own actions would declare the absolute unity of God. But since Klal Yisrael is bringing the Mashiach through the third Avodah, Yisroel, therefore, they themselves must go into Golos for 2,000 years. They themselves must go into Yisroel. Okay, that's the first thing that must happen. And that's been happening for 2,000 years. Klal Yisrael has been Golos for that persecution and domination by other nations for 2,000 years. The second thing the Ribbono Shel Olam is doing is he's increasing the Choshech. Since he is the only one that's going to declare his unity, not Klal Yisrael through the Chatoim. They will not declare God's unity, only the Ribbono Shel Olam. So if the Ribbono Shel Olam is going to declare his unity, he will increase the Choshech, the darkness, the illusion of forces, the illusion of successes independent of God, and the illusion of many different kinds of things and beings besides the Ribbono Shel Olam. Until when the Mashiach comes, it will be at the darkest possible moment in mankind's history. What does that mean? When the illusion of evil, that everybody's trying to destroy themselves, everybody's trying to achieve dominion, everybody thinks that they are succeeding because of their own might, is so incredible, at that point, the Ribbono Shel Olam walks right in. Right into that black room with the incredible bright light. And everybody just puts his hands to his eyes because they can't take their brightness. Which means that everybody at one shot is massing the incredible mistake that they've made in all the areas that they thought they were somebody. So by increasing all the millions of different ways of multiplicity of forces and beings, the revelation of each one of those areas shows the bankruptcy and illusion of what mankind thought previously. So therefore the second determinant of history is that there must be greater and greater choshech as the world goes on. You see, since the Yidden are going to bring the Mashiach through Kulam Chayom, and they are not bringing the Mashiach through the testimony that God is one, only through Yisroel, so therefore they must suffer for 2,000 years, which will bring the Ribbono Shel Olam, but the Gilui Yechudoi, the revelation of the presence of the Ribbono Shel Olam's Yichud Shlitosoi must be revealed through who? It must be revealed through the Ribbono Shel Olam himself. So therefore he's Machshech the Bria. You'll notice that the universe keeps getting darker and darker, the evil is more and more, and then finally he comes in and everybody's staggered by the blindness. Now, where do we see the historical events really shaping up to take place? And that brings us to several interesting phenomena of history that indicates what's happening. The first phenomenon of history that happens now, especially at the end, and that's how we know we're so close to the Zman HaMashiach, is the advent of science and industry. Now that may seem like a very funny statement, science and industry, and that's great for mankind. Why is that so bad? But the truth is that instead of being a toiv, it's a murdig ro'or, evil for mankind. Why? Because what does science do in industry? Science comes along and says, you know, you don't have to believe in God, and therefore you don't have to believe that he is the explanation of everything. Science explains everything. All these mysterious forces, electricity, magnetism, lightning and thunder, that you didn't know what they were all about, science now explains. It's nothing more than energy and matter, right? And gravity, that's all it is. So science, by providing explanation, has now given man the illusion that there's no Rebbe Shalom behind the universe. It's now all science. Science has the answer for all the mysteries that go on. That, why do you think the world is becoming more and more atheistic? Whereas before that, even though people believed in Avodah Zarah, there were many religions, but at least most of mankind was religious in some form or another. It was different religions, it may have been crazy religions, but they all believed in a supreme being. Now you find atheism dominate. Science is what's contributing to that, because man can become an atheist because now he's got the explanation of all physical phenomena. He doesn't have to believe that the Rebbeinu Shlom is responsible. It is now science saying that we have the explanation. It is now the atom, it is now the biological forces and the physical forces and DNA and so on. That's really what's behind all this mystery. So therefore, by providing an explanation, science is destroying the idea of the yichud of the Rebbeinu Shlom. And industry, what does scientists do? He turns to the engineer and says, well, here's the principle, you now apply it. Make something from it. So the engineer does. He makes the cars, the automotive engineers. So all of a sudden, man not only believes that there are many different forces besides the Rebbeinu Shlom, because the explanations now indicate that there are many different ideas and not the Rebbeinu Shlom. There's gravity and so on. Man also begins to believe in his shlita. Man now has a great life. He now really can control all these forces. He now can traverse distances at a short time. He's got automobiles. He can blow up atom bombs. He can do things. He can fly from one end of the earth to the other. He now has tremendous koyach, power, potency that he never had. So man believes, I am the one that can do. See, I can flex my, I can build the World Trade Center. I don't need a Rebbeinu Shlom to build the World Trade Center. So as a result of science, the explanations, and industry, that which gives man the ability to do what he understands, both of these are being further mastier, concealing the yichud of the Rebbeinu Shlom. And mankind has fallen into that trap. Mankind is given science and industry that they should even have a greater illusion about the Rebbeinu Shlom. Because like I say, Kulum Chayav means that the Rebbeinu Shlom is going to reveal his presence by himself, by increasing the Choshech. Science and industry is nothing more than a way of increasing the Choshech as the advent of the Mashiach draws incredibly close. That's what science and industry is basically all about. That's one side of the coin. However, had mankind been Zeicha, science and industry would have done reverse. But that I'll get into later on, because you have to understand there's a duality in everything that happens. But in any case, right now, the proliferation of science by providing an explanation, and industry by giving man the wherewithal of being able to do everything, increases the illusion or the choshech that man is under. Until the Rebbeinu Shlom, through the Mashiach, sucks everybody in the head. And he brings the light into that dark room, and man realizes that all this, what he's looking at, is nothing. It was all an illusion that he should not see what the Rebbeinu Shlom is all about. Okay, and that's the reason for one phenomena called science and industry. Now, there is another very interesting phenomena, and that is World War II, the Holocaust, which is also very relevant to the idea of the Mashiach. Now, the Holocaust itself is a very unusual phenomena. Probably one of the most strange and unusual phenomena of all, besides of the actual event itself. Now, what we must understand is that there's a certain principle involved. We see that these Jews themselves, as time goes on, have a constant spiritual deterioration. Jews are always deteriorating spiritually. They get less and less spiritual. There's a yirida. They go on lower and lower levels of spirituality as time goes on. In fact, the Chazal say, to illustrate this, that if the Friediger, the earlier Chazal, rabbis, if the earlier ones can be looked on as malochim, angels, then we would be looked on as men. And if they were looked on as men, we would be looked on as donkeys, and so on. That illustrates the tremendous spiritual deterioration that is going on in Klal Yisrael. As Klal Yisrael gets more and more estranged from the Ribbono Shel'olam as a result of the chatoim, the sins that are going on. So that's the concept, that there is a certain level or rate of spiritual deterioration that continues as Klal Yisrael does more and more averus and doesn't seem to be able to pull itself out of that. The level of spirituality gets less and less. It diminishes, unfortunately. Now, that is the principle. Now, with that principle, let us now analyze an interesting idea, and that is, what is the difference between the spirituality of the Jews in 1882 and the spirituality of the Jews in 1982? A mere 100 years difference. That's all it is. Over the thousands of years of Jewish history, let's take a look at the last 100 years. And you will notice that the last 100 years has done to the Jewish nation what all 4,000 years could not have done and has not done. And then we have to understand why. What is the significance of that? Let's take a look again at the Jews in the last 100 years. And we begin to see astounding events, historical events. First of all, the first idea is in terms of the quantity of observing Jews. If you take a look at the amount of Jews that were observant, not Orthodox. Now, the minimum criteria for Orthodoxy, for my purposes, or actually it should be, is the Shmir Shabbos. If a person observes Shabbos, that is the minimum criteria, what makes him a Frumi Yid. If he doesn't, if he's a Machal Shabbos, then basically he's not a Frumi Yid, even if he does other mitzvahs. But Shabbos is one of the major mitzvahs, one of the most fundamental and important. So therefore, I will regard that as the minimum criteria, that which constitutes or identifies an Orthodox Jew, or from a Yid. If you take a look at the amount of Yidin who were Shomer Shabbos in 1882, it was phenomenal. If you speak to Jews who are in Europe, who are still around, you know, who lived in 1910, 1920, and so on, You see the incredible difference, that the average Jew there was what today would be a tzaddik gomor, in terms of the kind of spirituality he had. His commitment to Yiddishkeit was radically different. Even though, now, this is notwithstanding the fact that there were very serious inroads, of course, in the Haskalah movement. You know, the movement that was taking form in Europe, started from Germany with Mendelssohn and so on, unfortunately. Even though, notwithstanding the reform movement and so on, which were making inroads, still, the main corpus, the main body of Klal Yisrael was fundamentally and committed Jews. There was no such thing as the majority of Israel being completely fry. The major segment of Israel was frum. 80% of Varsha, Warsaw, was frum, as late as 1925. So in terms of quantity, I would say at least 80% of the Jewish community throughout the world was frum. They still had the commitment, the seriousness, the devotion toward frumkeit that was always for thousands of years. So in quantity, it was staggering, much different than we have today. Take a look at the quantity today of frum Yidden. If you ask yourself, how many frum Yidden are there in today's times? You'd probably be lucky if they're more than 1 million. Out of, let's say, 15 million Jews, let's assume that's a world population, you'd be lucky if there were at least 1 million frum Yidden, Jews who observed Shabbos today. That itself would be very good. Now, what's the percentage of 1 million to 15 million? And the answer is 7%, because 150,000 is only 1%, 10%. Is 1%. 1.5 million, of course, is 10%. If you figure out, it comes out that 93% of Jewry today is fry. 7% is frum. People don't realize that the major corpus, the body of Israel, or what constitutes the nation of Israel, is fry. There's only very few Yidden left. 7% is nothing in terms of an ummah, a nation that was as great as Klal Yisrael. So that's the first staggering idea that you really have to come to grips with. that Orthodox Jewry is an extreme minority, a minority of a minority. And the majority of Jews are completely away from Yiddishkeit. For instance, the 3 million Jews in Russia, how many of them are from? Most of them don't know Yiddishkeit. I'm not talking about the people that you hear of, the Yechidim, individuals that are trying to get out of Russia and so on. Most of them have no commitment to Israel, to Frumkeit. Take the Jews in America. Out of the 5 million Jews in America, how many do you think are from? Basically, it's the community of Borough Park, Flatbush, and Williamsburg, and that's about it. Most of the other American population is Fry. In Western Europe and in Latin America and so on, most Eden are Fry. And of course, I'm not even talking about the assimilation rate and the intermarriage rate, which is incredible. The assimilation rate and the intermarriage rate is about 50% That means one out of every two Jews who gets married to a Goy, not to a Jew. And I'm not even talking about the assimilation rate of how many Jews are assimilating, even if they don't marry outside of Judaism, how much they are going. We don't realize that the quantity of Yiddishkeit is down to a trickle. That's the first staggering historical conclusion or event that we must understand. How do we understand this and why? Then take a look at the quality, even of those who are from. What kind of quality Jew do we have? In Europe, the Abalabos, looking at that as a regular person who made a living and went, he worked the whole day, he supported a family and so on. After 5 o'clock, he would go to a shul or yeshiva and he'd have a seder for 5 hours. The average Balabas there was on a much greater level than perhaps even a Rebbe in yeshiva today. They were much more committed to Yiddishkeit. Today, if you look around the quality, unfortunately, most of Orthodox Jewry, especially when you look around New York City and Brooklyn and so on, they're into designer dresses. They're into, concrete houses and so on, and beautiful floral displays. Unfortunately, Yidden are into tremendous amount of materialism, narcissism, and so on, where even if a person is from, he's an Orthodox, but it's usually, unfortunately, winds up being something like a Cholent Yid, where it's Cholent and Shabbos, and that's about it. People are no more in the arena of Yiddishkeit where they'll sit down and die for their ideals, where they'll try to put as much time away as they can for learning, when there's a tremendous amount of Mesiras Nefesh for every mitzvah and so on. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm not playing down or minimizing the amount of Yiddishkeit, but we all know that the quality of Frumkeit cannot even be compared to the quality of Frumkeit that exists in Europe. Forget about the quantity. The third major disaster, and each one of these is a disaster to the Jewish community, is the leadership. In 1882, there were gedolim all over Europe. Every city had a rov who was a chosh of a person. They had gedolim. In one city, if you were a chosid, you'd have chasidish rebbes, great rebbes. Without even going to the Rishon or the Sanzo, all the great rebbes of those days, the Ger and so on, they were all alive in 1882. If you look now at, and this is Hasidish, if you look at the Litvisha, you had Litvisha Gedolim, you had Rab Chaim, Nechofetz Chaim, Chaim Oizi, you can go down the list of each one who was a Godel Hador. Today's time, you look, there's the Rebbes, there are so few Rebbes left. You can number them on the fingers of one hand, the amount of Rebbes that are left, number one, and the amount of Gedolim, Litvisha Gedolim, you can even probably also number them on the fingers of your one hand. And all of these people, Rebbes and Gedolim, are in their 80s basically. What's left for a future generation? So I'm talking about the tragedy of Klal Yisrael. The quantity, the quality, and the amount of leadership is devastating for the Jewish community. And people don't realize that. Perhaps they get fooled by the fact that more yeshivas seem to be opening up or whatever, or Baal Tshuva movement, or whatever fiction that they're related to. There's no such thing as a Baal Tshuva movement in America, and even in Eretz Yisrael, it's only a handful, a couple of thousand of Yidden and so on, and that's unfortunately talked about as a movement. The Moonies, which is the Zen movement, is 30,000-40,000 people, and most of them are Yidden, is more than all the Baal Tshuva movement of American Eretz Yisrael. People don't realize that. So putting away all the fictions of a Baal Tshuva movement and this kind of stuff, the fact is that Yiddishkeit is in a crisis, which is, it's hard to say, but it's perhaps fatal in that sense. That the quantity of Yidden that are lacking, the quality of those Yidden, the lack of leadership and so on, all points to a perhaps a mortal blow to the body of Klal Yisrael. Now, All this happened in the last 60 years, 70 years. It's phenomenal. Now, we see a very interesting thing, that when you talk about spiritual deterioration, you notice that it took hundreds of years to detect a different level. For instance, take a look at the Zman of the Tanoim and Roim. The Zman of the Tanoim, the people who wrote the Mishnah and so on, they lasted 200 years. Then a new spiritual level is called the Amoraim. They are less, because an Amora cannot argue on a Tana. Those people who wrote the Gemara cannot argue on the people who wrote the Mishnah. Those Amoraim, they lasted 300 years. After the Amoraim, there was Rabbonim, Svaroim, whatever, they lasted about 150 years. Then you had the Goyim, which lasted 400 years. Then the Rishonim lasted another 400 or 500 years. Now we're in the Achronim, which is up to the present day. But each one of those periods, which distinguish a different spiritual level, took hundreds of years before the next level began. So obviously, before there was a spiritual deterioration, in order to see the difference of one Jew and another, it took hundreds of years. We take a look between 1925 and 1982, and the difference between a Jew in 1925 and 1982 spans a level that, had it taken the amount of deterioration that would have been normal, perhaps 500 years. It was done in the space of 60 years. In other words, to reach the Yerida, that spiritual deterioration of a Jew from 1925 till 1982, should have taken, in the normal rate of spiritual deterioration, perhaps 500 years. The difference, we're looking at 60 years difference, which is phenomenal. 60 years has devastated the Jewish community, where it looks like it has gone through 500 years, and in reality has gone through only 60. That is the fact. That's where we're standing. So the question is, how do we explain this incredible rapid deterioration of the Jewish nation? What would normally have taken hundreds of years, and what always took hundreds of years, between one level of spirituality and the other that distinguishes the different time periods of Jewish history, took place in 60 years. How do we understand that? Well, let's examine what did do that. And the answer, of course, is the Holocaust. What did the Holocaust do? Now, in examining the Holocaust, there are many, many different things to think about. How it happened, what does it mean, and why it happened, and so on. Truth is, hours and hours can be talked about it. I want to address myself merely to one point, and what it means in terms of the Yemos HaMashiach, because that's why I want to look at it now. What does the Holocaust do? The Holocaust destroyed 6 million bodies, Jews. That is half of Klal Yisrael. That itself is a mortal blow to any nation. When any nation loses one half of its adherents, that itself is a mortal blow. What were the 6 million Jews? The 6 million Jews that died came from Germany, from Poland, and from Russia, Litva. That was the cream of Jewry. In other words, the intellectual and spiritual cream of Yiddishkeit came from those communities. The remainder, that which was left over, was to a great extent only those few remainers that came out of Poland that were able to escape the war and so on, and most of the Jews from Hungary and Romania, which did not compare, unfortunately, with the spiritual achievement of the Jews of Poland, of Russia, Litva, and of the Jews of Germany. Spiritually and ruchniistic, it was much greater than the Jews of Hungary and Romania, unfortunately. So what was left? 6 million, half the Jewish population is wiped out. The population which was wiped out was the spiritual and intellectually elite, in that sense. Now, when you do that to a nation, when you destroy its leadership, its the spiritual heights that were in those different countries, and you take half the population, that in effect is a mortal blow to an ummah. It can never recover, because it takes years to undo the wounds of such a devastating... When Klal Yisrael lost its leaders, its gedolim, but it always had gedolim after that, and it wasn't in one blow, it wasn't half the ummah. Somehow they could always survive that. But however, the blow has been so devastating that one wonders if Klal Yisrael can survive ayidei teva, through normal means. So that's in terms of what the Holocaust did. Now, after the Holocaust gets rid of 6 million Jews and the cream of Jewry, what does it do? So what happened in terms of the Holocaust? then where do the Jews wind up going? They wind up going to America, right? And or they wind up going to Eretz Israel. And certainly the Svadisha lands all wind up basically going to Eretz Israel. America and Eretz Israel finishes off what Hitler started. How? Take a look at the American situation. What is America? What is the hallmark or the quintessence of America? America is a land of incredible materialistic success. That's what America is. America's ideals and values are materialistic, not spiritual. No matter how much they spout, that's only to look good. But basically, the ideas and the values of America is materialism. It's not idealism. Okay? So therefore, that's the first thing America has to offer, is an incredible system based on the values of materialism. Another car, a beautiful house, you know, more dresses, and God knows whatever else you see on TV. This is the American value system. The second thing that America has to espouse, besides its materialism, is its incredible narcissism. America is concerned with itself, or rather the people, it's not only America really, it's Western civilization, because you find this all over. But I use America because America is the macaw, is a source of this, from and emanates Western civilization. You have the narcissism of America, and you see even in the advertisements, you've come a long way on a cigarette, have it your way. What is America saying? That you don't have to compromise or sacrifice for other people. It's yourself that counts, the beauty of the self. It's a tremendously narcissistic self-love culture. One of the social phenomena that has arisen because of the narcissism in America is divorces. The divorce rate is incredible. Now, people know that in order to make a marriage work, you need compromise. You need people living in terms of an idealistic life, people who are willing to sacrifice for somebody else, people who are willing to compromise to make a marriage work. When you take two narcissists and put them together, each one loving themselves, of course, there's not going to be any compromise. There's not going to be any kind of self-sacrifice in order to make a marriage work. They're not both a man and a wife working for a higher ideal in terms of a spiritual house and so on. They're working for material things, and then after working for material things, and the wife wants her things in the material world, she wants to go out and get her job, and the husband wants his success and so on. Divorce is merely a social phenomena that has occurred because of the narcissism. It's not the only reason why divorce has occurred. There are other reasons. But at least that's certainly one of the reasons why the divorce rate is much more pronounced. But in any case, the materialism and the narcissism of America is staggering. The third idea that America has to offer is incredible greed. America is a very hungry country. When you take a look at the oil companies, when you take a look at the corporation, the banks, and those things, and Congress, everybody is interested in getting rich, and getting rich quick. People don't work anymore. There's no work ethic. People are not proud of their work. America produces an incredible amount of shoddy material. And unfortunately for America, people are waking up to it, not buying American products. What does that say? People are not proud in terms of working to produce a good product where they want to be proud of themselves, and therefore my signature, what testifies to me is my product. They're not interested in that. People want to make money quick. Therefore, what America also has to offer is tremendous greed, and greed is what's destroying America today. In addition, what America has to offer, and this seems to be good, is that everybody has a very easy opportunity of making a good living. You know, the streets paved with gold and so on. Now, all these ideas, which is really gels in terms of American Western civilization, is devastating to the former Yid. All of a sudden, the Yid is pulled out of his ghetto, which was very good for the Jew because it sheltered him from all the incredible atheistic and materialistic designs of Western Europe. He's pulled out of that because that's the end of the Jewish community in Europe. He goes to America, and all of a sudden he's confronted with a materialistic society, a narcissistic society, a greedy society. And not only that, but America invites the Jews in. On the contrary, it's a democracy. It gives the opportunities for the Jew to become involved in the American system. That is devastating for a Jew. So look, after 6 million people die, half the Ummah, they get, after the cream of Jewry, which would have protected them from influence, materialistic, because they thought the leaders somehow shelter the people from getting exposed too much gushness and so on. So the cream is no more around, the leadership is no more around, and on top of all of that, they get thrown to America, which works the opposite, devastates them from the other side. And then when the Sfardi Shehidim get to Eretz Israel, who do they come face to face with? The atheists that are running the government. And we all know, without going into names, that whole Jewish agency before the war, which became the government after the war, and when Israel achieved nationhood, they come in and they find all of a sudden these from Eden, the Yemenites and the Sfardim, come to a country that they are forced to become fry. What the Israeli government has done to the Sfardish Jewry is unheard of in the annals of Jewish history. How they schmatted up those Eden, how they made fry. And anybody who wants to confirm that, just take away at most way most Israelis look, and you see that, is this Jewish? This is the product of 20 or 30 years of an Israeli government that was completely fry.
Labor Party.
Well, yeah, the Labor Party, in essence. So therefore, the American Jews, or rather Jewry, is devastated on both counts. That's why Jewry looks the way it does today. Because when Hitler starts it off with his action, and America and Israel starts it off with their actions, it comes out that 7% of the Jewish of the world, the Jewish nation, is from, and those 7% are very poor in quality compared to what was before the war, and the lack of leadership. Is there any wonder why the Jewish nation looks the way it does? This is how it happened. The next question we have to begin understanding is, why did it happen? What does it mean in terms of the Ribbono Shel Olam that he has allowed this to happen, and in terms of the Yemos HaMashiach? That's the next question that we have to begin wondering about.